Good morning, and welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Good afternoon and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we have an exceptional hour here that is going to start off with an interview with a very, very special lady. And she's an example, I think, for all of us about how we can reach beyond ourselves, step out of our box, and reach for something bigger than what we ever dreamed we could reach for. My guest today is Swanee Hunt. The title of her book is Half Life of a Zealot. Swanee, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
I hope you don't mind me calling by your first name.
Please do. It was so strange when I came back from Vienna after serving as ambassador. No one ever called me by my first name, and I kept trying to get people to do that in Austria. And then when I came back and everyone did it, it was shocking at first, but it's great now.
Well, I'm glad. I want to let my audience know a little bit about you. You're the founding director of the Women in Public Policy Program at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. You chair the Initiative for Inclusive Security, including the Women Waging Peace Network. You're the president of the Hunt Alternatives Fund and a member of the U.S. Council on Foreign Relations and the boards of Crisis Group and USA for the UNHCR.
That's the High Commission on Refugees.
Thank you. And then you've also been an ambassador, a U.S. ambassador to Austria from 1993 until 1997. You have authored an award-winning book, which was titled This Was Not Our War, Bosnian Women Reclaiming the Peace. And you've been involved in writing for so many publications for American and international print media. You've also done a nationally syndicated column for the Scripps Howard News Service. You are quite accomplished. You've got more than one degree. You've got a doctorate in theology. You're a woman that has a passion for life that when I read your book, I have to tell you, Yvette Montero, Yvette Romero with Montero and Company, who published your book, is a friend of mine. And when she sent me your book back at the latter part of 2006, she said, Donna, you're going to absolutely love this because Yvette and I have worked together for years. And I said, okay. And when I opened your book, started it, Swanee, I was captivated by it because I thought, this is a woman who has such courage, but more than anything else, you are so candid. You are so open. And I understood it took you a few years to write this book. How long did it take you to put this together?
Oh, I worked on it for 9 years. But, you know, you'd think that with 9 years that I could have covered up a few things. I promise you, Diane, the most common reaction people have when they see me after reading my book is, it's so honest. And I think, oh, no, what have I done?
No, I think it's wonderful.
Thank you.
Because
thank you.
You really show that life is a journey. And no matter where you are in life, no matter what status you've been born into, and you were born into a family of tremendous wealth, we still have our work that we have to do. We still have to go through our own levels of growth and development. And I love how you started off with your book with Bobby Dylan that said you've got to serve somebody. You may be an ambassador to England or France. You may like to gamble. You may like to dance. You may be the heavyweight champion of the world. You might be a socialite with a long string of pearls. But you're going to have to serve somebody. Yes, indeed. You're going to have to serve somebody. Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're going to have to serve somebody. Those are lyrics out of one of Bobby Dylan's songs. Tell us about your dad, Arizona Slim. You know, you have such a wonderful history here.
Yeah.
But you also had some real difficult times. Tell us a little bit about your dad.
Sure. My father was born in 1889. My grandfather fought in the Civil War, which was an amazing thing to be able to say. I haven't met anyone else my age, I'm 56, who had a grandfather in the Civil War, but my father was 61 when I was born. He never had any formal education. He was raised on a farm and then left home and became what we would call nowadays a hobo, I think. I mean, he was a short order cook, and he was a lumberjack, and he helped lay the railroad and planted eucalyptus plants out in California and tried out for a baseball team. You know, just he became a professional gambler and really fit in with that whole rough and tumble oil and gas world that was developing out in Arkansas, and ended up through some extraordinary moves becoming the largest single owner in what became the largest oil and gas field in the world, which was the East Texas oil field, because this was before the Middle East discoveries.
Mm-hmm.
And so he became then the wealthiest man in the country, had a family with six children, one of whom died recently, Lamar Hunt, who was my half-brother. But then he ended up having two other families that were with women to whom he wasn't married, although there was a lawsuit about that case with the other woman, not my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the youngest of all of those children, so I'm the youngest of 14 or 15, depending on how you count. And he had a very hard time building relationships with at least my sisters and me,
mm-hmm.
and as a result, we moved into the house after his wife died, and my mother was much younger, almost 30 years younger than he was. And so we were moving in with this older man that I did not know was my father, even though he had visited us many times because we lived just 5 minutes away. I just, it was a secret. And I thought that my father was in the Foreign Service, and that's why I never saw him.
Amazing.
So we really lived in many ways a lie, although there was a lot of love, a lot of nurturing in our family from my mother.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, she was almost as nurturing as he was not.
And your mother was such a special woman, because in that era, in today's world, many people live together and nobody makes a to-do about it.
Yeah.
But with her being 30 years younger than he was, and she was absolutely devoted to him.
Yeah, but thank you for pointing that out. This was Dallas, Texas, one of the most conservative pockets in the country. And she also had grown up on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
And basically he seduced her. He met her in a law firm. She was a secretary. And she had a... she became pregnant and didn't know what to do, and so he said, I'll take care of you. And then she had one child after another, and he loved sort of,
mm-hmm.
he loved the idea of having a dynasty, I guess, in a way. And she became very, very involved in the church, First Baptist Church in Dallas. We spent 18 hours a week at church,
mm-hmm.
and which was so odd. I mean, you'd think, well, how could that be if she was his mistress, but people didn't talk about it very much.
Mm-hmm.
And so I grew up with this real sense of these parts of my world that just didn't fit together at all. Like one of the things I say you may remember at the end of lessons I've learned is life is not a jigsaw puzzle. The pieces don't fit. Yeah, we keep trying to make them fit.
Mm-hmm. Yes, many times we do.
Yeah, if I have parents who did such and such, then I must be this way or that way. And
mm-hmm.
and if I'm a good mother, then my children won't ever think that I'm neglecting them, and things like that, which if you talk to a lot of people, you discover aren't true. But still, we walk around with these myths inside of ourselves.
And that part of your journey is dealing with a lot of these myths. I want to quote out of your book that Hugh Hefner in Playboy magazine once called your father an irritating enigma. No one, not even his own family, professes to understand him. No one, not even the partners he's made rich, seemed to have any idea what drove him to amass his vast fortune, and no one, not even Mr. Hunt himself, seems to be able to explain just what he's trying to accomplish in the political arena. So nobody understood him. He was just an enigma. I think Hugh Hefner really gave a very good description of your dad.
People looked at him and gave interpretations a lot, trying to understand him because he was this big public figure.
Mm-hmm.
The name Hunt in Dallas, or I would say in Texas, has the same kind of ring as Rockefeller does across the country. And so every place we went, people were gawking and saying, oh, gee, if I had the millions of H.L. Hunt, you know. But life inside was not happy. It wasn't so pretty. And I used to think I was, the most violated girl on earth. And, you know, that was just an ignorant thought because I had no idea what was happening to girls in the world. You know, or I wouldn't have thought that. But it wasn't a happy scene. My father was an ardent anti-communist and had a radio program called Lifeline that talked about how the U.S. needed to pull out of the U.N. and, you know, the Ford Foundation was run by communists and all the universities were run by communists and Martin Luther King is a communist. And that really dominated our world.
Mm-hmm. A fascinating aspect that you were born into is all of these unique characters. And for those of you who have just joined us, we're talking with Swanee Hunt. Her book is Half Life of a Zealot. And it is, again, a book with such candor and insight into a life that has had so many fascinating moments in it. You make a comment in here about a time in your life, and I'm jumping ahead, Swanee, I'm jumping ahead to an experiment that you did when you were rather young, and you actually decided you wanted to have an experiment, and you were for 24 hours, you were cold, hungry, you described it as being nervous and lonely, and you had, in one day, to deal with $1. What promoted that experiment, and how did that change your life?
Well, I spent many years in a theological seminary, some in Fort Worth, some in Louisville, Kentucky, and then finally in Denver, Colorado. And it was while I was in Louisville, I was 23 or maybe 22, and I took a course in ethics on poverty. And this was called an urban plunge, and they had a group of us, about maybe six, who wanted to do this, and we didn't see each other during this time. I mean, we met for just a few minutes about midnight to see how everyone was doing. But basically, it's as you say, we were each given a dollar and went to downtown Louisville, and we just separated, and I discovered what it's like trying to, for example, sleep in the bus station and being roused by a security guard and told, you can't sleep in those chairs, and then being out on the street and having nowhere to go, and then going into a bar and having a young soldier from Fort Knox say, you know, let me buy you a drink, and then, you know, we could get a motel room, and I promise nothing will happen, and, you know, that was when the bar was going to close, and saying, no, thank you so much. And then trying to walk outside and figure out what to do, and so I thought, well, I'll be safer if I keep moving, so I just kept moving, and until finally daylight came, and I was so relieved when the first bit of light came, and then I thought, and I'd been up all night because I was too frightened to go to sleep, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I had to figure out how to get some sleep. So I found a traffic triangle that had a grassy space in the middle, and I lay down and slept on the grass with all this traffic going around me. And I thought, I mean, now, you know, when I walk down the street and see someone pushing a grocery cart or or sleeping in a doorway, I have some kind of sense. I mean, at least I'm a little bit closer to understanding what that's like.
That's very much like the adage, don't judge somebody until you walk a mile in their shoes.
Yeah.
That type of situation. You have a wonderful sister whose name is Helen, that you have had a very strong association with, and both of you, due to various choices and circumstances, have decided to be very much involved in making this world a better place. And you've done so much together, and you went into an ambassadorship. And for those of you listening, there is so much more to this book. There's just no way we're going to be able to cover it in the time that we have. How did you evolve into this ambassadorship that led you to this world-changing experience or life-changing experience regarding the world? Maybe that's the better way to say it, that took you there. That was just such an incredible thing to evolve into your life. How did you get there?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Thank you for asking. But, you know, it's interesting when you talk about, well, you know, this remarkable father who taught her zeal and passion, and the mother who taught her compassion, and people will say, well, gee, you know, that's not my life. But everybody has the experience of trying to separate from their parents, or has a sibling like my sister Helen, to whom they cling, and as they make the journey. There are all kinds of lessons in this book that you don't have to be rich and famous and all to experience. And the reason I wrote the book was to try to convey some of the commonalities we have. But what happened is that in 92, I'd been working on homelessness and mental health reform and public schools, and there was a presidential election that I had zero intention of getting involved in. But I got so annoyed watching the Republican convention, where there was all of this gay bashing and talking about women as if the only natural women were those who stayed home and, you know, didn't try to join the workforce. And I thought, what is this? We're going backwards, you know, and what is going on here? So I said, well, I'm going to put on a women's symposium in Colorado, and we called it Serious Issues, Serious Women, Serious Money. And we had Hillary Clinton and Tipper Gore and Kathleen Kennedy Townsend and Kathleen Brown, you know, all kinds of women with all kinds of expertise, you know, whether it was in reproductive freedom or the economy or healthcare reform or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we gathered a bunch of women in Denver where I was living, and we raised, to support this, $1 million. But we had women in the crowd who were on welfare or all different socioeconomic situations. But I had a lot of sponsors. And in doing that, I got to know Hillary Clinton because we planned it together. I mean, I don't mean to overstate. We had a few hours where we went over the agenda and got her ideas. And she and I really liked each other, like really liked each other. Mm-hmm. So when, to my great surprise, Bill Clinton won the election, they invited me to be in the administration. And I thought, well, I'll go work on welfare reform or something else that I understand a lot about. And my congresswoman was Pat Schroeder, whom you may remember. And she said, no, you should be in an embassy. And I said, I can't be in an embassy. I mean, I'd lived in Germany for 4 years and spoke German, but I didn't know foreign policy. And she said, look, you can learn foreign policy. You should run an embassy in Europe. And I said, no, Pat, I can't do that. I gave a big contribution. And she just said, Swanee, that's who gets these political appointments. And I said, but I have been a member of Common Cause, and we fight this kind of thing. And she said, Swanee, just grow up. And I said, but Pat, everyone's going to think I'm just there because of my money. And she said, Swanee, they already think that. And I just thought, oh, well, you know. And it was this huge leap for me. I mean, the most people I'd ever managed was 9. And suddenly I had 500 people in the embassy. Mm-hmm. And there was a war going on next door that I got very, very involved in trying to help stop. And this was just a few years after the fall of communism. And so there were all these brand new democracies, and I was convening the women leaders from all of these 39 countries, and it was great. I had a wonderful, wonderful time.
Now, you entered into an arena of tremendous upheaval when you went to Austria, because it was right next door to Bosnia, and there was so much that you learned about history. The fact that women there were not given very much in the way of recognition. There was thought patterning. You just had so much that your eyes were open to. You know, we all sit in our own little ivory tower sometimes, not aware of what's going on in another part of the world. We just don't have the capacity of even having a real sincere empathy with it. But you were right in the midst of this, and you were even in the area when war was going on. Your life was in jeopardy at a point. How did this transform you as an individual?
Well, it was also a time that I was in enormous distress because I had a daughter who was very, very sick with bipolar illness.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had become suicidal and extremely depressed, and then she would swing to mania. And as you know, I describe this a lot in my book. She read every word of this beforehand. And she said, Mom, if you're going to tell this story, then you have to tell the whole truth. And she didn't want me to gloss over it, and I didn't. And so there's some gripping scenes where, mm-hmm. you know, she's being rushed to the hospital to have her stomach pumped, and I'm curled up under my desk trying to think, what have I done wrong? And anyway, what I learned working in this war area, I remember meeting with a group of survivors from a massacre, and I was talking with them. We were planning an event to try to draw attention to their plight. 8,000 boys and men had been massacred. They were all unarmed. And it was just this amazing moment when I was meeting with Sonia, the organizer, and she said, by the way, how's your daughter? And I said, well, she's not well. And I explained that she tried to kill herself. And I looked at Sonia, and Sonia had tears streaming down her cheeks. And what I realized is that when you have been through grief, like losing your three sons and your husband and your two brothers, as this woman had,
mm-hmm.
what happens is not that you necessarily become hardened, but possibly you actually develop a huge capacity for empathy. And that's what happened with Sonia. She was crying because my daughter was in distress.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what each one of us has the possibility of doing. And whatever the life situation is that has been the most painful for you can actually, instead of driving you back, can actually enable you. It can carve you out inside. And when it carves you out, it creates a space in which you can take in the experience of another. And that's what I learned, that when you go into places of extreme pain, like a war area, you need to go with all your own vulnerability,
mm-hmm.
as well as your strength.
You have had some fascinating experiences. One is the wonderful experience of meeting with Viktor Frankl, who was a survivor of horrendous experience during World War II. And you had the opportunity to meet him, and he asked you about the book that he wrote, Man's Search for Meaning. And he asked you a question, do you remember the book, because you'd read it many, many years before, did you remember the book in your mind or your heart? And
yes.
He said you remembered it in your heart.
Yes.
And he was pleased, because that was something that meant so much to him. You have so many powerful points of insight and wisdom in your book. humor in your book, but it's a story of your journey that's brought you in contact with powerful people from around the world, Mr. and Mrs. America on the street, and Mr. and Mrs. whoever in different parts of the world. What is your passion at this time? What is it that you really are wanting to do right now in your life, Swanee? With all of this that you've done, your book, you've done so much. What is it that you want to next climb in the way of mountain of achievement?
Well, from my experience in Bosnia, I saw firsthand the effects of war. And you may care about education, but you know what? In the middle of a war, there's no school going on. You may care about health care, but you know what? You can't inoculate children during a war. Mm-hmm. And you're dealing with crises. You can't even get medicine in during a war. You know, you may care about beautification or arts. I mean, all of that grinds to a halt. So my passion now is trying to prevent or shorten war. And the way I have found that is most effective to do that is to bring women into the process, into the decision-making. And when we think war and women, 99% of the people in the world think, oh, yes, war. Women are terrible victims of war. They get raped, they get mm-hmm. killed, they mm-hmm. get displaced, they lose their homes. Well, you know what? All of that's true. Thank you. But if you think of them as victims, you think of them as powerless. If you think of them as survivors, you realize their strength. And if we would bring women in to the decision-making table, they would be much quicker to end a war. And I'm talking about women in a critical mass. I'm not talking about every single woman.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a Maggie Thatcher necessarily. But it's if you get 30 to 40% of a parliament, a congress, women, you start seeing shifts in the budget spending, for example. The spending goes into healthcare and education, and you decrease the military spending. So I'm very hopeful about the movement in our country and other countries to increase women's political participation, but even more important, I'm working directly at getting women into negotiations and getting people in Washington to fund women-led demonstrations in the streets,
mm-hmm.
Women-led efforts to stabilize a country after a war by reaching across the conflict lines and creating joint education and women's caucuses where they bring women together from all political parties.
Well, I think it is marvelous. Now, do you have a website for the organization, the foundation that you are working with towards
yes.
this objective? What is that?
Well, and the easiest way is just SwanneeHunt.com.
Okay.
And SwanneeHunt.com then will take you into the program at Harvard or my private foundation or my arts. I'm also a composer and photographer, and it's a pretty interesting place to roam around.
I think so. In your book, Half-Life of a Zealot, and I'm going to give a quote by Gloria Steinem, Swanee Hunt's life reads like a novel. Born into a powerful, conservative, and patriarchal American family, a young girl grows up to use her part of that power to support the powerless and to encourage peace and women's leadership around the world. To discover the fascinating story in between, you must read Half-Life of a Zealot. Swanee Hunt has been my guest. Swanee, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. It's been delightful to have this opportunity to interview you, and more than anything else, I wish you continued success in all that you do.
Thank you so much.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be coming back in just a moment. Again, my guest, Swanee Hunt, Half-Life of a Zealot. And go to her website, SwanneeHunt.com. That's SWANEE Hunt.com. We're going to be back in just a minute. Don't you go away now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604. 582-5604.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. I wanted to say telephone lines are open, and if you'd like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I'd be delighted to do that. Here are the telephone numbers. If you're in the U.S., the toll-free number to call to chat with me is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. If you're wanting to call in from Canada, the telephone numbers are 888-810-8322. That's 888-810-8322. We also have another line of 530-876-3222. There's so much in life that we work with, and I want to thank those of you who are sending me emails, and I want to invite you, if you have a very special story, if you've got a special recipe, hey, do you have something special you do on Valentine's Day? Well, why don't you just go ahead and send it along to me at Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at Delphi, just like the Oracle, D-E-L-P-H-I, International.com. And I'm reviewing material. I'm still catching up from my business trip that I was on, and I will be sharing other odds and ends with you. And I had to share a few of this. This was sent to me by Gail, and these are some Zen sarcasms, and I really liked a couple of them. So I really wanted to share a couple of things, a couple of thoughts. One was, some days you're the bug, and some days you're the windshield. Do you ever feel like that? Some days you're the bug, and some days you're the windshield. And to me, that was so graphic, and when I looked at it, it just made me chuckle. So I thought I would share it with you, because that is something we have to be aware of. And when I think of our guests that we just finished talking with a short time ago, we often have misconceptions. We will look at what somebody's got, or we'll read about movie stars or famous people, and we'll create these fantasies about them without realizing that these are people just like us. For some reason, they have had this role of abundance, in many cases, that they have in their lives. And then we say, oh, aren't they lucky? Gee whiz, if they had to go through what I went through, they wouldn't understand. But there's the reality of life, and that is all of us are not going to get through life without experience. And we're all going to have our ups and downs, and we're all going to have our twists and turns in life. So it's what you do with it, no matter what your class is. Have you ever heard the song where it goes, and I'm trying to remember, I wonder what the king is doing tonight? It's in Camelot, the show Camelot. And then they then switch it, and then that's what the peasants are singing. And then the king is in his castle, and he says, I wonder what the people are doing tonight. And both of them are in their little world, thinking the other is better off than they are because they've got various things that they're handling. And I think one of the very best gifts we're ever given in life is, first of all, to appreciate where we are and to have gratitude for where we are in a moment, no matter how we may want to change it, good, bad, or indifferent. However, when we can just appreciate where we are and say, you know, I have got so much that I can be grateful for, then we can turn things around and make our life a lot richer than what we would ever expect. Let me share a story with you this afternoon. This is a real experience that I had, and I was in my 20s. I had the opportunity to meet this couple. The wife's name was Yvonne. The husband's name was Bob. And I've come to know them through the woman who was my mentor at that time. And this was a member of her family. And I thought, gee, I wonder why or how Yvonne got associated with Bob, because there was a big gap in their age. And they were married, had been married for a little bit of time. And I had the privilege of sitting down and hearing her husband's story. Now, this is a man, when he was younger, the time I met him many years ago, he was in his late 50s, early 60s. And he had, according to what he told me, become quite successful when he was in his 20s. He was a script writer for major studios in Hollywood, and had just had this incredibly wonderful life. He had the boat. He had anything and everything he wanted. And he said, my self-esteem was so low that I ended up becoming an alcoholic, and I ended up losing everything that I had and living on the streets. Well, Bob stayed in this environment, seeing all kinds of things, the worst of worst, and at times sometimes the best of the best in human character. And he said, one day, I woke up and I realized I'd been on the street for 20 years. And I said to myself, I don't need this anymore. I don't want this anymore. 20 years living in the gutters, on the street, and being in situations that most of us would not even want to think about, much less experience. Well, after he did that, here's this man who is extremely intelligent. He decides he needs to make a living. So what he does, he becomes a person that hangs wallpaper. Now, how exciting does that sound? But Bob had made a choice. He had made a decision that he wanted to make a difference in people's lives. He said there was nothing regarding alcoholism that he didn't understand, because he had lived it, done it. He had seen drug addiction. He had seen all kinds of things. So he decided, so when he cleaned up his act, he wanted to let other people know and help them know that they didn't have to stay where they were. And he had heard all the stories because he had told them all himself, so nobody could con him. Well, that was his mission. Now, he was the finest person you would have ever wanted to hire to hang wallpaper. And he said it allowed him to work the hours he wanted to work. It also gave him access and opportunity to talk to people that otherwise he would never have been able to reach. And that was his life. His wife ended up going on developing a gift, a flower and gift basket business that became quite successful. And the two of them were very much an odd couple, yet they were both very dedicated to making a difference in people's lives. And his wife had had the opportunity to experience what it was like living on the street and going into garbage bins, finding their food for the day out of garbage bins and back of grocery stores. And she said, it's amazing what you can find back there. And this was a number of years ago. And it was a lesson of insight into a world that I had had little glimpses of as I was growing up, but I never saw with the depth that Bob did. But through his sharing his story, there was a lot that I learned. And I think that when we go through life, if we're willing to listen to other people's stories, many times we can get lessons from those stories without having to go through the pain that those individuals maybe have had to go through. Now, Bob never regretted being 20 years on the street. He said it was his choice. That's what he decided to do. And that is important to be aware of. Remember, you are in charge of your mind. You're the one that makes the choices day in and day out, moment by moment, about where you're going to put your thinking, where you're going to put your attitudes, and in general, where you're going to have dominion in your life. And of course, that's always with choice. So as I share the story with you, just be aware of the fact that you're far more powerful as an individual than you could possibly ever imagine. But just like with Bob, sometimes we go through our twists and turns in life not believing that we have that capability until one day we say, hey, guess what? I really do have it, and I don't need to go through these lessons anymore. But I would hope that, well, unlike Bob, you are not going to take 20 years to get there. But if you do, that's okay too, because that is your choice. But remember, you do have choice, and that is so important. And you can choose to be whatever you want to be involved with, and you can choose where you want to push and put your passion for life, whatever it may be, whether it's in music or politics, whatever it is that touches your heart and mind. That is what you need to be honest with and be aware of. So, sometimes during the day you'll feel like you're bugs, other times you'll feel like you're the windshield. Realize that it's just a part of life. Donna Sebo here. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Give me a call at 877-876-5227. That's for U.S. 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-810-8322. That's 888-810-8322. And by the way, all you need to do is give me your first name or your initial. That's all. And then I'll tell you what I get in my mind and share it with you. And then after that, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything you like. I do want to let you know about our guests that are coming up. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about cholesterol. Oh, my gracious. This is something that always comes up in conversation. Well, we're going to be talking with Dr. Janet Brill. She's going to give us understandings about cholesterol and how you can do what you want to do for yourself, and you maybe won't need to have drugs. You can do things in a natural way. Also, we're going to be talking about Ayurvedic healing and nutrition. We're going to be talking with Dr. Yurima in Hawaii, and we're going to be talking about the magnificently gorgeous book of Eat, Taste, and Heal. Also, this week, we'll be talking with someone who actually escaped from Baghdad, Saul Goliath Safi, and his book is titled Full Circle, Escape from Baghdad. Fascinating story. And then, for those of you who have a passion for jewelry, absolutely love it, we're going to be talking with Lee Leshner, who deals in antique jewelry. She's got some marvelous publications. She's been a guest on my show before, so we're going to have some fun discussing, you know, Bakelite, jewelry, and all kinds of things that maybe you might even have in your own jewelry chest that has a value you would never, ever have believed. And, oh, we've got so much more to share with you. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227, or from Canada, 888-810-8322. Oh, and I want to let those of you know who are listening in the state of Washington, I'm going to be doing an appearance for With the Woman's Show, March 23rd, 24th, and 25th. You can go to my website, find out more information about it, but I'll be speaking there. This is a show that's from 10 to 6, and it is just awesome. Thousands and thousands of women come out for this, and I'm so delighted I've been invited to be a part again this year. So don't go away. We're going to be right back. Donna Sebo here. We will be back with more good things to share.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, He's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-810-8322. And that's for Canadians, and I'll be delighted to chat with you. I wanted to share some information about nutrition today because more and more research keeps coming out about how important it is for us to be aware of this so that we're able to enjoy not just good health, but have the stamina, the energy to get through our very, very busy days. And one of the things that comes up quite frequently is how in today's world we have an overabundance of sugar. And what they find is, and especially with women, they've discovered that if women take in a lot of sugars, high levels of sugar, it often creates effects because the body is trying to compensate. It's just not getting the nutrition that it needs. And there's a woman by the name of Connie Bennett, and she said that she just couldn't get through a day without having all of her goodies. You know, she'd have them frequently during the day. And she said she'd get cranky, she'd get tired. Now, this is a woman that was not overweight. This is a very slender lady, and she said she just got to a point where she couldn't concentrate, and no matter how much sleep she got, it just wasn't happening. If she did get sleep, she wasn't awakening refreshed or rested. She thought it was PMS because that was the buzzword in her working environment. And so she would say, what is wrong with me? She started getting headaches. She even started getting heart palpitations. And she said the only thing that ever made her feel any better was sweets. And so she said she would grab a soft drink or she'd, you know, have a candy bar, anything that would give her high amounts of sugar. Well, she would talk to a friend about this, and one of her friends said, you know, go in and have yourself checked. She did. She tried therapy, and nothing was working. So after a number of years of trying every option she possibly could think of or explore and find, she had a serious breakup with a boyfriend, and she just said, I was totally responsible for it because I was having this mood and blew up at him, and she said, and he said, enough, I don't need this anymore. Well, that really, really got her thinking. So she found a physician, and this physician was one who was educated in nutrition. And little by little, more and more doctors are becoming aware of this. But for many of them, if they get 6 hours of nutritional training, that's really saying something. Well, in this case, she found a physician that had an interest in nutrition and really liked working with his patients to find out what was going on. So he asked her when she went in for her first time with him. He wanted to know about her diet. And he said, I want to know how much sugar you're having. So he got her to give a detailed bit of information about what she was taking in. And he said, okay, we're going to do some blood tests. And after they went through the blood tests, he said, you have reactive hypoglycemia. Now, hypoglycemia is a term many of us have heard. But to say reactive hypoglycemia, that was a term or a combination of words I had not heard before. And he said, this is what he told her. He said, if you eat too much sugar, it makes your blood sugar level spike, causes insulin to release, which lowers blood sugar so quickly, it makes you crave more. And he said, it can happen to anybody without any lasting side effects. But he said, if you eat sugar like you're doing all the time, it'll become a vicious cycle. And he said, one, that can cause all 44 symptoms. Count them, 44 symptoms she had that she was going through. He said, everything from shakiness and fatigue to crying jags and mood swings. And he said, do you know how many women have these very same symptoms? And it can all be related to diet? She was stunned. So she said, all right, doc, now what do I do? He said, well, while most people would feel better by just cutting back on sweets, her symptoms were so severe, he said, you've got to eliminate the sugars entirely and simple carbohydrates entirely. That blew her away. She didn't know she could do it. She said, at first when she started doing it, it was terrible, but after 3 days, her cravings began to fade. She had more energy, and she felt less moody. Well, her friends and family were just thrilled. They said, you're back to your old self. You're really a nice person. We're so glad you've rediscovered yourself. And so she has started to write about this, and she said, kicking sugar changed my life, and what could be sweeter than that? And there's some things that they say that you can be aware of, and you need to ask yourself what you're eating, because if you have severe mood swings, strong cravings for sweets, if you're extremely hungry between meals, joint and muscle aches, cold hands and feet, sensitivity to light and noise, panic attacks, irritability, severe PMS, if you are consuming high amounts of sugar, it can relate to that. And if you want to get away from it, it just 3 weeks, it can make a big difference, and you'll get through this. It's what they call a sugar cleanse. Then what you want to do is have lots of veggies, and if you're going to have fruits, which are naturally a form of natural sugar, you want berries, citrus, apples, and pears, and they are loaded with vitamins and a lot of healthy antioxidants. You want to have lean proteins such as soy, fish, beans, and chicken, because protein helps keep blood sugar stable. And then you want healthy fats in moderation, your olive or flaxseed oil and nuts, because they help keep hunger and cravings in check. And what you want to avoid are corn products, potatoes, beets, dates, raisins, bananas, grapes, watermelons, and mangoes, because they drive blood sugar levels way up and then cause them to plummet. And that can cause mood swings and cravings. And you want to avoid simple carbs such as white flour, white sugar, and regular pasta, and even dairy. So, if this is something that possibly could be relating to maybe some of your discomforts, just some information. We're all different. All of us are different. Some people can have sugar and it doesn't bother them at all. It all depends on your biological makeup, chemical makeup, if you will. So if this is something that you want to explore, it's not a bad deal, is it? Not a bad deal at all. Donna Sebo here, 877-876-5227 or 888-810-8322. And by the way, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Dr. Janet Brill. We're going to be talking about cholesterol. And this is something that I think you will find very, very informative. And oh my goodness, Valentine's Day is going to be coming up before we know it. And you know what? There are some things that you can do if you've got that special person in your life, if you're wanting to improve the relationship that you have with that significant other. One of the things that they say people should do is hold hands. Isn't that romantic? I mean, I just think it's always neat. That's something that my husband and I, that's something that we enjoy doing, and it's something that makes that special feeling between people. And they say touch of any kind boosts endorphins, the brain chemicals that improve mood. And wives and husbands that hold hands usually experience less stress. Now, how they found this out, they used MRI scans, and scientists discovered that female volunteers who received mild electric shocks experienced less activity in the areas of the brain that register anxiety when they were holding their husband's hand than when they were holding someone else's hand or no one's hand at all. Gee whiz, I wonder how they got the volunteers for that one. Regardless, it's something good to remember. Well, this is Donna Sebo. Our time is up. We're going to be back with you bright and sassy tomorrow. And I want you to remember you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You're the writer, you're the producer, you're the director of your life. What do you want it to be like? Why don't you give yourself some time today to think that through? If you do, you might find you want to do something entirely different. And my gracious, what wonderful adventures you could explore just by opening yourself up to that possibility. This is Donna Sebo. Thank you for being with me today. We'll be chatting tomorrow. Talk with you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.